Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Dave Briglio, and this is Making the Play. So welcome to tonight's episode, and which we'll be having a talk about a coaching journey with Coach Carrie Taylor. Carrie, you with us?
Yep, I sure am.
Excellent. Well, thank you for being here tonight. And those of you who aren't familiar with Carrie, she is a big deal in the soccer world. I'm going to go through just a part of your resume, Carrie, okay? And I'll let you
get
a few of the highlights. But aside from being a high school coach, she teaches the National Youth Coaching Course for U.S. Youth Soccer. She has formerly worked with U.S. Soccer National Training Centers. She has been a coach at division, I believe it's three level, for the head coach for a men's and a women's team. And she also has her own show, Women Talking Football, on her podcast. So, Carrie, I'm going to turn it a little over to you because I think people definitely want to hear all that you've been into and start getting into this journey that you've been on for some time as a coach.
Yeah, sure. First of all, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. I love talking about women and coaching and sports in general, so I'm really honored to be on the show. My background, I grew up as a soccer player and played multiple sports. I played at the University of Michigan as a collegiate player and just kind of fell in love with soccer, and I was supposed to go to medical school, and one day I told my dad, I want to be a soccer coach, and he about killed me, but here I am multiple years later, and, you know, I'm really thankful for the life I've been able to lead through soccer. I've been able to travel the world and meet lots of great people and impact kids, which, you know, is what it's really all about.
It is, and I got to ask you, because I have a house full of girls here. My wife and I have four daughters. And so I'm all the coaches typically that I have been involved with it since youth sports came back in my life have been on the women's side of the game. But you talk about, and again, I was a dad with my oldest daughters in college, and you said, tell them, you know, I think I'm going to be a coach. something tells me that could have been a complete surprise. I mean, I'm sure there was a realization for you, but somewhere that must have been in you kind of waiting to come out. Or am I assuming too much?
No, I mean, I actually started coaching when I was 15 in my hometown of Flint, Michigan. We had summer programs, and so I started coaching when I was 15 and always would go back to my hometown during college and still give back and, you know, be a guest coach and things like that. So I actually started to get my coaching licenses in college because, you know, a former coach of mine, you know, said, hey, I think you'd be good at this. So I was already coaching while I was in college. And then, you know, I remember it distinctly. There was one night where we were on the field and we were practicing, and it was just like the perfect temperature and the perfect lighting. And I said, I want more of this. And I just, right then and there, I knew, you know, like I wanted to be a coach and wanted to extend my involvement in soccer because I was never going to make the national team. And at those times, we didn't have a pro league. We had, you know, some semi-pro leagues, which I played in for 2 years. But, you know, I just fell in love with the sport and soccer and all it can give and the life lessons it can teach. And I've been enjoying it to the fullest.
Well, so you started coaching at 15, and obviously as a player, you had a variety of coaches, and I've looked through some of your information because there's you remember a lot of your coaches. I've seen you talk about them, and I'm not going to throw out which name, but and we'll do up, you know, throughout the hour here. But was there one that, you know, helped you get connected from that 15-year-old girl turning into a young woman, you know, that kind of stuck with it? It wasn't just about being around soccer. It was, you know, being a coach, which is more than, again, just hanging around after your playing days are done.
Right, right. Well, there's two people. Linda Hamilton is one who, she's a former national team player, and she was my coach for 1 year at the University of Michigan. So she is a big role model and mentor of mine, who I still keep in contact. And it was funny, I went to visit her last October, and she's coaching a Division III school, and she pulled out news clippings from like the Michigan Daily newspaper when she was coaching me, and I was the captain, and I would always get, you know, asked for a quote in the newspaper, and I was reading through those quotes, and I had to laugh because I told her, I said, God, I was already a coach then, wasn't I? And she was like, yep, I pretty much knew you were always going to go into coaching. So that's one key mentor. I mean, I've had a lot in my life. Probably my first coaching director, Peter Gagliotti, he used to run the Ann Arbor Arsenal, and that was like the first club that I coached at. He would take us to our coaching staff to the NSCAA conventions and would take us to the NCAA championship games and really like got us connected as a staff into all the networking and things like that. So through him, I was able to start to meet other coaches and connect with other people, not only in the Midwest, but across the country.
Well, among those coaches, again, that, you know, were very memorable to you, do you recall at a point in meeting those coaches and working with them where it went from being a coach to a mentor, you know, a much, you know, one step above just somebody there that, you know, talking X's and O's and trying to motivate you to work hard?
When that transition happened with some of my friends, is that what you're asking?
No, I'm sorry. And by the way, am I cutting out at all by any chance?
No.
Okay, good. We've had my headset here the other day, but back to topic. What I was curious was those coaches that really stuck with you, you know, either whether it was the actual relationship over time or that connection, what was it where it went from being they were your coach to being someone memorable and like a mentor, something beyond the sport? Was it an incident or just some feeling? What is it they did?
No,
you know?
Yeah, that's a good question. 'Cause I get asked all the time about like mentoring programs and different things like that. And I tend to be of the idea and thought that mentorship kind of grows organically, and you can't just stick two people in soccer and say, okay, here, give this person advice. I think you have to build up a lot of trust, and, you know, Ralph Perez is another name that I mentioned quite a bit. He's been a tremendous mentor for me, and, you know, he helped me try to gauge in college when I was handling two soccer teams at the College of Mount St. Joseph, and one was winning and one wasn't. And I was like a roller coaster every day, and I would call him and bounce ideas off of him. And, you know, I think just building trust amongst coaching colleagues and knowing that, you know, you could call them at any time and they would be there for you is kind of how the mentoring happens. In my eyes, it's more of an organic type thing.
Yeah, you can't tell people you two are going to be friends.
Right,
you can
exactly.
You can be acquaintances. I guess we can be those people we know and are friendly with. But when, you know, the term your friend is somebody that, like you say, I'll be there. What do you need? That's not scripted. And I think that's a tough part for a lot of coaches because some will take, I'm not going to say the easy way out, but they'll just say, you know what, I'm not here to be their friend. Because I'm sure it can be frustrating.
Right.
If you're hoping for that connection with every player, you're not. Even if you are a good mentor, you just can't assume it's going to click. And have you had that as a coach where, you know, obviously you're doing a lot to reach out to the women and men that you've coached. What do you do or have you done if we just suspect, you know what, we're probably going to have a limited relationship here. We're just, you know, not going to click. How do you not give up or not force it too hard?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good question, because it's definitely true. You as a coach often resonate differently with every player. And, you know, looking back, there are definitely some players that didn't resonate well with me, and I didn't resonate well with them, you know. But as long as you as a coach are treating them fairly and treating them with respect and are trying to connect, that's about all you can do. You know, I've had a lot of players come to me after they graduate and say, you know what, now everything makes sense now. So sometimes they don't get your message when you're actually their coach. It needs to sink in a little bit, you know, down the road, and when they can reflect on their experience, or maybe if they go to another team and they have another coach that's, you know, totally different than you are, then maybe they appreciate what they had with you better. So there's plenty of players I keep in touch with, but plenty that probably, you know, would say, yeah, she was all right, but we just didn't connect, which is fine, because you're not gonna have the same impact on every single player.
You're right, but you did mention something else, and I think back to just my experience in playing, that there are coaches where it's not till years later when you have a different perspective. And, you know, maybe things change a little bit over time as to how it really occurred. But there is a different appreciation for coaches that you'll have.
Yeah.
And some the other way, where some that you thought were, you know, really, really cool, but then later on you might have found out. It swings both ways as to what, you know, coaching really is. But I think that's the part which is, you know, as coaches, you only have them. I mean, if you have a player for 4 years, that is – an eternity to be able, I mean, to
right.
truly be with them and get to know them, that you're really just picking up where the last coach left off, working with
yeah.
that, and then trying to put the next coach in a position to, you know, do even more with that player. And that is hard as a coach, because we always talk about our players, you know,
yeah.
and it happens. And I think in, you know, with schools too, students and things like that, but not to degree in sports.
Yeah.
But I want to ask you about, you know, we talked about the show being about a coaching journey here, and you have an interesting one, not just, I mean, it started with you obviously getting your dad's blood pressure up, saying no med school, it's going to be a coach. But what were
yeah.
the next stops after that? I'd like you to go through a few of those, because I think, to me, you being able to take this path, regardless of the fact that it became in coaching, means that you got something good out of sports early on at the right time in your life. So I'm going to let you – what happened after you decided not to go to med school?
Oh, sure. So I stayed in – I went to the University of Michigan. So after I graduated, I started working in Ann Arbor for the Ann Arbor Arsenal, and I was working also at the University of Michigan athletic department in their fundraising department. So I coached there for a little while and decided to try my hand at being a college assistant. So from there, I moved to Temple University and was a college assistant there. That experience didn't go quite as planned. So from there, I decided to move to Cincinnati, Ohio, where I was at for 11 years. So I worked with a club called the Sycamore Arsenal. Then I worked at Xavier University as a Division I assistant. And then I decided maybe I wanted to use my undergraduate degree, which is in biology. So I became a biology teacher at the high school level for 4 years and coached their high school team. And then I decided I want to get back in the college game. So I went to the College of Mount St. Joseph, and they were starting a men's program. And it was a job coaching both the men and the women. And a very good friend of mine told me, hey, Carrie, put your name in the hat. I know someone there. Like, I can help you get an interview. And I thought they would never hire a woman to coach a men's team. But I went for it, and they were open-minded. So I got to start a college program at the D3 level as the first ever coach there for the men's team, and I took over the women's team, which had been in existence for 10 years. So, you know, preseason, I was on the field four times a day, and we had back-to-back doubleheaders, and it was lovely and intense, and it was about eight years rolled into four. and I love that job, but I reached a point in my career where I was kind of tired of being in the Midwest, and, you know, I'd always heard about Southern California soccer, and I just went for it and found a job in California and packed up and moved to California and have worked at a couple clubs out here. Then a good friend of mine got a job with the Vancouver Whitecaps and asked me to come be his assistant with their W League team. So I moved to Canada for a brief time, and right after I got hired, they decided to discontinue the program. And so I went from a two-year contract to a six-month stint, and I had to come back to SoCal. So coach became a director of a club here, and now I'm kind of consulting and writing for Soccer Nation and doing my own podcast called Women Talking Football. And I'm also helping the city of San Diego. There's a big push to get a MLS franchise down in San Diego, so I'm helping with that initiative currently. So that's my 20-some-odd years in a nutshell.
Well, and we're going to get into a couple of the bigger things because, again, for those just joining the show right now, Carrie has basically is big not just on women athletes, but women coaching, the equality there, the battles that go on. I mean, you've heard her talk about how she got the job as the coach for a men's soccer team that, aside from being unusual, there's a lot you have to say, and we'll get to on what it's like to be a woman coach. But I want to focus on one thing here that I read about. You mentioned that this path of yours has helped you to discover your why. And
right.
I think that's real important because, again, for, what is it, 99% of athletes, sports is not going to be a career.
Right.
And you need to discover, you know, it helps you to your why. But why is that such a big deal to you, I guess? And or how do you make it a part of, whether it's on your podcast or your coaching or the other organizations you work with, how do you help people discover their why?
Yeah, I mean, it took me a while. I mean, I've always been involved in the game, but I think I wasted some time in my career always chasing like the next thing. And, you know, I talk with a friend of mine all the time about chasing a magical unicorn. And then you get to a certain level and you realize there is no magical unicorn to chase. And you need to, you know, embrace what you're doing at that time and really enjoy it because, you know, you find life is too short to wish away your days for another job or something. So, you know, I finally, you know, discovered that I can be perfectly happy, you know, having a podcast and spreading the word of, you know, women's empowerment in sport in general, and coaching kids and just enjoying it and, you know, being involved in different projects and helping friends with their soccer-related projects has really been so enlightening for me. And, you know, I wish I would have kind of focused on the now, you know, 10 years ago, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like I was always pushing towards something, and I realized finally that the something's right in front of me. So I guess helping other people figure out, like, hey, you know, if you're interested in getting into coaching, like, do it now. Like, if it's your passion, do it now and embrace it and focus on what you're doing right now and don't worry about the job 10 years down the road. You know, just be a good person, make connections, you know, get out there, get networking, and your career will happen as it should, not as you, like, try to push the envelope and make it happen, if that makes sense.
It does. And actually, you're talking about a lot of things that several of our past guests have talked about. Rick Jarrow had talked, he's got a book called Creating the Work You Love, and he talks about, he says, well, I don't plan anything. And I think he's taken a little too far, because I know that he does explain how to plan, how to create, you know, the work you love. And actually, to be honest, that's how I started doing some of this. Not that I said, oh, I should do a podcast for coaches and teachers and mentors, but it was more of realizing, you know, trying to get to a position in a corporate ladder in the technical field I'm in, that just seemed like that was something I'm supposed to do. That's just, you know, what I
right.
thought was the path. And for, you know, similar to you, for 10 years, I was planning around that, and then realized I'm not sure getting there has got anything for me. And the
right.
ride has not been a lot of fun. And I went right back to just the part of the work I enjoyed. And from there, other things came out of it, which including, hey, I wanted, instead of all my time, you know, trying to manipulate or work my way through that obstacle course, I'd rather just help people, whether it was volunteering at the high school or coaching. And then, you know, a show like this comes about. And it takes as long as it takes. And that's what
exactly.
it really, like I say, I think, you know, I look at the years, I think you mentioned was probably around 2009 was the beginning of that journey, or an important part of it, going to Vancouver and so forth. That's
yep.
about the time where I realized maybe what I've been trying to get to isn't it. And I wasn't sure what it was going to turn into. And I think it's just more of connecting with people, which is what I do much more now on the job. Mentors, teachers, things like that. And that's the hardest part, especially working with players that think there's one path to becoming the best that they can be.
Right.
Now, I do want to switch to... go ahead.
Yeah, sure. No, I was just going to say, I think a lot of players don't understand that you can bloom late, too. I think people and our culture in general is all about, you know, if things happening right away. And sometimes you just need life to kind of happen as it happens and let it grow a little bit organically.
Well, and I'm a big fan of baseball, and they talk about how, you know, the key year in a player's career is when they're about 27.
Right.
And in so many other sports, you know, they'll talk about them, you know, kind of getting over the hill. And
yeah.
It's because of it. Baseball is a different kind of game. There's a lot of sitting and thinking. Not that it takes any more brains than another sport, but it is a different type of a sport. It's not pure speed, pure strength. And that's just part of the development. They realize that some players just figure it out suddenly in their late 20s, when that is long past the college career.
Right.
One of the things I do want to, again, talk, because I have been taught a lot of really good things by a lot of good women coaches at the rec, high school level. Some of them have been coaches at the collegiate level. And I want to spend some time on that, because the importance and the state of women in coaching and the importance of gender equality, and especially because now you're seeing that, like, my daughters are big into lacrosse, and as a Title IX sport, now there are many more men going into those coaching positions.
Mm-hmm.
And because
yeah.
the sport has advanced so rapidly from what those earlier women coaches are doing. So it's got, there's some backlash going on. But I want to turn it over to you now. And what do you want, you know, people listening here, to know that you're doing, that they can help out with, to help with this gender equality?
With the gender equality? I think the biggest thing that you know, we need as women in the game is we need male advocates that understand, you know, that there's nothing wrong with having strong, authoritative, self-confident women out there coaching. So, I mean, we don't get anywhere without the support of our male colleagues. So that to me is key. And I have, you know, wonderful mentors and wonderful friends who coach, who have always been big supporters of myself and of women in soccer. We need more young women who have played the game to take the risk and get involved, whether it be through refereeing or coaching or becoming an administrator, whatever it may be. It could be going into sports marketing. I mean, you can make a career out of sport in various ways. And, you know, there's a huge number of women and collegiate athletes that, you know, maybe don't understand it can be a career choice. And, you know, it's not an easy career choice by any means, but it's out there. So, you know, I've been involved with a couple of symposiums out there and been involved on a women's soccer committee in Cal South just to galvanize other women in the game and make connections. You know, I was on the phone today with a referee who lives in San Diego who I forgot, like, I needed to reach out to her and I forgot all the stuff that she was involved in. And I reached out to her today and, you know, she's going to be on my podcast. And, you know, just making connections between the women that are already in the game and give support. And, you know, if each one of us can inspire one other young woman to go into what we're doing or follow in our footsteps, you know, then each one of us can do that each year, then we're getting more numbers in the game.
Yeah. And I think it, again, just being involved strictly with the girls rec side and noting, you know, it's difficult for the moms to typically
yep.
come out and coach, whether they know more or less about the game. And that's, you know, it really has to do with the talents of each spouse at home, you know, who can handle the kids. But I've had some friends where the woman is the breadwinner and
right.
that lens, it's interesting that just fixes. Once that dynamic is there, it's really not a gender thing at that time. That's part of, I mean, there's a little bit going on, but it just has to do with the time. And I think that, encouraging more and more high schoolers to want to be, you know, the young adult that comes back to be the coach, that then would encourage, I think, more moms to say, yeah, I can come
yeah.
out. I want to do more, because it really, especially in the women's games, I don't really, you'll have to educate me on the differences if there are in soccer, but in lacrosse, it's very different. And
yeah,
yeah, very, very different between the two. And the importance of knowing how to play the game right is one thing, but it is also a communication thing. I mean,
yeah.
it really, and I was accused of trying to run all the male coaches out. And it was really more of, well, guys, it seems to work better when the coaches know the game. The girls are just
yeah.
learning better and better and better. And I said, and I was then lowering myself to being a bench coach, because
right.
I found, to be truthful, I found that to be so much more enjoyable, actually, to know there was somebody that knew the game better.
Right.
Also could, that I could see how those women were connecting with the girls. And I learned a lot from that, actually, from not having the pressure of trying to always be the one with something to say. And I think I learned an awful lot that actually I begin to even use now, because I have a lot of young women that work with, you know, in their early 20s in the job. And I start to
right.
understand the dynamic a little better from what I've seen over the last 10 years. So I would say that that would be the place, if it could just start a little more at the rec level. And get those. I think the pipeline is starting to fill. You know, we talked about wanting to welcome the girls back on their breaks from college, to just make that the culture.
Yeah.
Because I think too many moms just, they think the dads need it in their life to coach, and I think a lot of us guys do. There is something
yeah.
about blowing a whistle. We can't deny
yeah.
that.
There's that ego thing. Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I found, because I've been involved with some recreational organizations, I found that a lot of times the moms don't put their hand up
But if you ask them and say, hey, I think you'd be really good at this, or hey, could you give some time, maybe start off as an assistant, generally they will. But I've always found that women need to be asked instead of, like, they don't always want to put their hand up and say, hey, I'm in. And I don't know if that's typically just the difference between the genders or if it's just differences in strengths. Like, I have no problem. One of my strengths is I'm not afraid to take charge and I'm self-assured and, you know, like, I'm always in the front of the classroom and I'm always like, all right, I'm in. What do you need me to do? And I've always been that way. But a lot of women don't feel as comfortable, you know, doing that. And so they need to be encouraged and pushed a little bit. And we can do that in multitudes of ways. Like, I generally have high school students come help at my summer camps. And, you know, I actually, once I feel comfortable that they can handle stuff, I'll give them, hey, you've got a group. You know, here's our topic, figure it out. And, you know, if you put them in situations where they actually have to use what they know, that they do just fine, you know? So.
Well, absolutely. And I think that right now the current generation of, we'll just say high schoolers, is probably the first widespread, or the first group where it's widespread that they will have the opportunity to help coach at the rec level, to do summer clinics, you know, these little, I've seen so many of those where some of the women will come back on college break and they'll want to run a little, you know, a field hockey, a soccer, a softball camp, something like that. And they're starting,
right.
So the girls are starting to see that now, and it's not unusual to them. So I find that to be encouraging. That's the,
yeah.
You know, it's the pipeline, because like you say, it's not, I know plenty of women that take charge. In fact, most of my superiors in the working world have been women. So that,
okay.
To me, that's nothing new at all, but I do think that,
right.
There is something a guy will often in sports be willing to jump in and coach something that we're probably not too skilled at. And I saw that again with a lot of women's lacrosse, but because they're used to saying, well, somebody's got to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it is a little bit of ego. So what did you notice anything different internationally? Cause that's another thing. Now you have a very different perspective, not just what goes on, you know, obviously you're in the Midwest, you were in the Pacific Northwest, you're in California, what did you see in some, or maybe tell people some about your international experience? Because I think this is a very cool program that you were involved with.
Oh, with Coaches Across Continents?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, so I'm involved as a volunteer with an organization called Coaches Across Continents, and they provide partnerships with organizations in 41 different countries. So last summer, I had the opportunity to go to Zimbabwe and Zambia, and we got to work with coaches in both countries. And it's just an amazing experience. And it was a little bit about the X's and O's, but more about how can you take soccer activities and actually have conversations about social change. So we were teaching soccer games, but we were also pulling out messages about, you know, women's empowerment or HIV and AIDS or child rights or access to education. So all the games are tailored with some type of social message. And it was so powerful and just extremely amazing. I'm going back and traveling again this summer, and, you know, just really opened my eyes in a lot of ways to the power of sport and the power of soccer in particular. I mean, it's the most played sport in the world. And, you know, I would get in a taxi in Zimbabwe and the taxi driver would have like a Barcelona sticker or a Chelsea sticker. And you would immediately start talking about, you know, soccer and the team that you support and the local team. And it was just like a way to meet new friends and, you know, or acquaintances for the, you know, for the time being, and just laugh and share experiences. So a great program. It's called Coaches Across Continents. You can find them on website and on Facebook if you want some more information.
Well, and I think that's, you know, you talk about how sports gets through. We've got some other speakers coming up in the coming weeks to talk about how sports are used to help combat the trauma that some people have gone through. It helps mm-hmm. them connect and things like that. This is a whole different, I mean, you're talking not about individuals, which is difficult enough, but you're talking about societies that have some difficulties, major difficulties
yeah.
in the roles that people are allowed to play. And you're right, something as simple as kicking a ball. And that is what's interesting about soccer, because we've always said this that when I work with rec councils, is that you always kind of do something that follows soccer's lead, because all of our kids, it didn't matter what sport they ended up playing, whether it was volleyball, baseball, lacrosse, it doesn't matter. They all played soccer initially.
Right.
And but we don't see that here as a communicator so much like you see
right.
internationally. And what were, I guess, in what were some of the I guess, let's go with the most memorable things, maybe a friendship or just someone who told your story. What did soccer, again, and just being a coach and really trying to connect with people, what was something you weren't expecting to get out of that trip? Something that just comes to mind above all other things.
Yeah. So when you travel with Coaches Across Continents, you travel with someone that works for the organization. So I got to travel with a wonderful woman named Nora Dooley. And while we were in Zimbabwe, the organization that was hosting us asked us to meet with a bunch of women sports leaders while we were there. So we had a day and a half of meetings with women who were involved in soccer and judo and cycling and netball and trying to think what else. Maybe I think those were the sports. And we sat with them and helped organize like a women's sports foundation committee. And I got an email about 6 weeks ago saying that the committee is still going and that one of the women on the committee is the new director of soccer in Harare, which is the capital of Zimbabwe, and is like been hired to be the pro women's team coach and everything. So for me, like sitting in a group of women in the middle of Zimbabwe and helping other sports leaders just kind of organize and talk about, you know, share ideas. And to know, like a year later, that committee is still thriving and that the Sports Commission of Zimbabwe is putting money towards it is even better. And that, you know, I was able to play a little small part in getting that, just, you know, getting that pushing forward, just make, you know, it just tickles my heart. And I'm so excited about that. And I still keep in touch with a lot of those women in Zimbabwe.
Well, I mean, that is a vehicle of equality. We've talked about, again, equality, gender equality within the sports that are established. That's a whole different universe you're working in when the sport is important, but what it's doing is elevating those women to,
yeah.
I mean, being recognized. You say the government wouldn't have found them worthy of funding, let alone probably paying attention to them had they not found a way to get organized and to believe in each other.
Yeah. So it was super powerful in the, you know, the Sports Commission that brought us together. I mean, they've been great in keeping the support for the women in Zimbabwe. So that was great. And then you go to another country and you have the exact opposite where you don't have any women. So it was just like a crazy experience, you know, seeing women be empowered on one hand, and then in the neighboring country, you know, they kind of looked at us like we were crazy that these women were going to teach these men, you know, football. It was, you know, it was two different experiences rolled into one, basically.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit too. So, what'd you do? I mean, they're looking at you like you're from another planet. I take it that you want to teach them something that they don't see you as having the ability or the right, probably, to teach them.
Yeah. So in Zambia, and I love the people in Zambia, but I will never forget walking up to the field the first day with my counterpart Nora, and we were the only women there, and we walk up, you know, to a group of male elders. And they looked at us like, who do you think you are? Like, you could just read their body language. And the first day it was a little rough. And then, you know, by Wednesday we built trust. And by Friday they didn't want us to leave. So, you know, that experience in seeing just transforming maybe a little bit about the way people think about women in sport was an awesome experience as well. So, you know, and one of our big messages there was that women need to be invited to play. And their message back was, well, our women aren't as confident as you. And I said, oh yeah, they can be if you ask them to join and you make them feel comfortable. So by the end of it, there were three women from the village that decided to come out and take part in the program. So they, you know, they went through all the activities, and by the end of it, the men were including the women and saying, hey, come play on my team. And so it was awesome to see that transformation in a 5-day period.
Well, and, you know, you talk about they need more confidence. And earlier you talked about how, you know, there is definitely more of the male ego. I mean, that's just in there. I've played against and worked for many women who have a definitely huge ego. So I say women are just as capable of that as men, but it's not as frequent. That's just not the role. But let me ask you this: is, you know, do you think maybe men are just better at putting on the facade of confidence that, you know, you talk, there's confidence and there's self-esteem. And I see self-esteem as what's deeper, you know, confidence is what people see from the outside, whether there really is any self-esteem on the inside. I guess your perspective on that, do you, the best coaches have that self-esteem regardless of gender. They don't, like you said, they don't have to beat their chest. In fact, I'm usually a little skeptical of a lot of the, you'll see a lot of the coaching quotes that you can just picture the coach, you know, literally beating his chest. And it seems like it's a little bit much, you know, you're just trying to convince somebody to be confident where they're not. Whereas, again, on the women's side, it just comes out less forced and I think more genuine. And I think a lot of male coaches that where I see that have that, sometimes they're seen as not being strong enough. So they'll almost that's not going to work. He's too quiet. Thoughts on how for coaches that are out there listening right now, whether they, because I think some people feel they need to be loud to be respected as a coach and going against, you know, their better inner person. Have you ever had to deal with that or seen someone who was struggling with trying?
Yeah, the one, first of all, you're breaking up a little bit, so I just wanted to let you know that.
Okay.
But I could understand it. I mean, I think there's two things. I think the one thing with women is that no matter what environment we walk into, we constantly, if it's a new environment, we have to reprove ourselves over and over and over again, be it as a coaching instructor, be it as a new coach at a high school, be it whatever. If I walk in and I'm going to do a session and the people don't know me, I can tell that they're like, who's this woman? Like, what does she know? And then I go, okay, let me do my stuff, and then I'll go do a session, and then they're like, oh my gosh, that was great. So for women, you have to understand that no matter what, you have to reprove yourself in every new environment. And once you accept that and you don't have a chip on your shoulder about it, you can just go be you and do it. So I think it took me a while to get to that point, because early on I was like, well, I know my stuff. Why are they looking at me like that? Why do I have to prove myself again? And then when I finally said, you know what, Carrie, don't worry about it. Do your thing. You know, once they see, you know, your stuff, you'll be fine. And the second thing is that I feel every coach is different, and you can't pretend to be somebody you're not. Like, you can't watch your favorite coach and be like, hey, I'm going to coach like that person, or I'm going to coach like that person, because it could be totally out of your, you know, realm of your personality. So you have to find your own coaching personality, and that personality could be different depending on what environment you're in. You know, like, I can work with six-year-olds, and I'm a totally different coach working with six-year-olds than I am working with my high school team. Or I can work with a men's team, and I'm a totally different person with that team. So being able to read your group and then kind of adjust your coaching style to that, yet keep your authenticity, is a tough thing, because if you haven't figured out who you are and what your why is and why you're doing it, and, you know, kind of grown into yourself as a coach, you're going to test the waters and kind of be figuring that out along the way. So, I mean, I coached a lot different when I was 25 than I do now.
Well, and I think we definitely all adjust at all. And I don't mean, you know, you're having a bad day, you know, but like, you really don't know what the why is. Have you had any of those moments lasted, not just the practice, but maybe there were a week or two where you're really wondering, I can't figure out a connect, I can't do it? Or did you ever run into somebody who maybe had that trouble that you got to help them through it to kind of relax and get in touch with, you know, what they do well and maybe what they're forcing, you know, trying to be somebody else's style?
Yeah. I think it's happened twice. When I first took over a program a while ago, I had a really hard time connecting with the team. And there were 13 seniors on the team, and they were so used to the old style and the old way that the coach did things that it was literally, they made my life hell. Like, I'll just be completely honest. They made my life hell. And I tried to change my ways, and I tried to come at it from multitudes of different angles, and literally they just weren't having it. And so I endured that season. I just was like, okay, this group needs to graduate. And they're great girls and they're nice people, but it just wasn't clicking. So, you know, I tried to ask friends for advice and this and that, and a lot of them said, nope, I know that group of girls, like, they're not going to change. And so I've struggled with teams, and, you know, we're in coaching, you're going to have great years and you're going to have some mediocre times, and, you know, you're going to have one or two seasons that you're like, okay, maybe I should have, you know, tried a different approach from day one. So, like you said, you're not going to connect with everybody, and sometimes you're going to struggle, and that's okay, as long as you learn from it as a coach and analyze it and say, you know, how can I be better next time, and what can I do differently? And then, well, you know, I go ahead.
No, so it sounds like, you know, you have a plan and you're not forcing it, because, you know, eventually it works out. We talked about earlier, you only have players for so long, and
yeah,
you just can't, you can't try and be a different coach, but you can't just want to, again, drop everything to get them to like you if they're not open to it. It takes two people to have that bond.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I looked at my way of coaching that team, and I tried to evaluate different ways that I could approach them, but the bottom line was they were used to a coach that was very young and, like, was more their friend than their coach. And I was never going to be that. I was never going to cross that line, you know, with a group of young women where, you know, I was talking to them about parties or stuff like that, that, you know, like, I was never going to be their friend. And that was really hard for them, and it was hard for me. And so, it was just, we endured the season and did the best that we could with what we had, and we got through it.
So. Yeah, and that brings it back to one of an earlier point, because I've heard some coaches say, I'm not here to be your friend. Well, you're here to be something more. I mean,
right.
An actual stronger connection, whereas that one that and I think some coaches are afraid that they say, well, if I'm not going to be their friend, well, that's crazy. I need to be their friend a little bit. That's almost their partner in crime at that point, when they want you to be their friend.
Yeah.
That's more like, again, someone they're friendly with, someone that isn't going to lay down the laws that need to be laid down because, again, just to quote another one of our earlier guests, the coach, which is a mentor, has to do things that the parents or shouldn't.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's the timing or the situation. And that is why we don't have 12-year-olds coaching 12-year-olds or 18-year-olds coaching 18-year-olds, because they're not ready for that. They haven't figured out how to step into that mentoring role. But it's definitely you're not their friend. It's more, not more authoritarian and you know, soul crushing, but one that just
right.
says, you know, I'd love to do that with you, but I really owe you a little bit more. And that's tough.
As you know, coaches are in a position of power over the athletes and you know, there are lines that can't be crossed, and you know, you have to establish that player coach trust. It can't be friend trust, or you know, sometimes coach, sometimes friend trust, because then you're sending mixed messages to your athletes as well. Like if you try to, you know, walk that line too much. And it's hard. Like I've had times when I was coaching at college where I had an assistant coach and she was great, but she was starting to cross the line with the players and be their buddy than their coach. And, you know, I told her, I said, if you ever want to be the head coach of this program, when I leave, you can't ever come back on the coaching side. If you're their friend, you're never, you know, like they're never going to look at you like their head coach once you go to the buddy side. And, you know, I felt bad because I made my poor assistant cry, but, you know, I thought it was my job to kind of give her that life lesson. And, you know, she ended up taking over the program when I left. And I'm not sure that some of the players ever really looked at her as a head coach. But.
And that's part of, again, why this is more than just X's and O's. And you can take that scenario right there and you can apply it to any setting, whether it's, again, you're also a teacher, but I'm a consultant. And, yes, there's all kinds of buddy-buddy joking around, cut each other slack over stuff, you know, complain about the same things. You'll back up somebody on a complaint that's probably pretty ridiculous, you know, if they have a complaint about management. Just to, you know, be their friend. But at some point, you have to, if you feel you want to be a leader, you do have to separate yourself from that. It's not that you don't understand them, empathize, but you're just not doing them any favors at that point. And it's that inconsistency. And that is the other part, too, which is coaching is not a management position. It's a leadership position.
Yeah.
And management has the, and again, you know, different sports manager can be higher than coach or lower. But the way I've just seen it is that when you're managing, that's, you know, you do things right. You know, this is the way it gets done. It gets executed. And you can have all kinds of, you know, style as you do it. But the leader is doing the right things and then gets handed off to someone with that management skill. And that is, for those that want to become a coach, that is a look in the mirror. And it might make you cry if it's not something you're ready for, if you're not ready to choose, in which case then don't choose. You're not ready for it.
Yeah.
And just wait till you are, because, you know, like we say, this is a journey. And, we've got a few minutes left here. I would like to focus on the newest part, or the big one here is, your show.
Okay.
Talking Football. Tell me a little bit.
Yeah.
Tell us about your show, when it's on, how people could listen in, the type of guests you have. And I'd like to kind of wrap things up with hearing about you more.
Sure. So I started a podcast called Women Talking Football, and I stream it on my website, womentalkingfootball.com. It's also on Facebook at Women Talking Football. It is a show about how women can influence the world's most beautiful game, basically. So I have men and women on, and we talk about college sports and youth soccer, and we talk about, you know, challenges of, you know, after your playing career is over, what do you do? It's on Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Pacific time. So it's on tonight. I have a guest on tonight named Maureen Monte to talk about how to find your strengths and as a coach and as a player and galvanizing teams. So it's a tonight's guest is not soccer specific, but we have a multitude of guests on. So it's been a blast doing it. I love it. You know, I hope that the listeners enjoy it, and it's just about sharing what other people are doing out in and about in the sport. And I'm really enjoying doing it. So I want to keep it going.
Well, and I think, you know, hopefully people will, you know, got a couple hours till your show comes on. If not tonight, in the future, listen to it. But you told me something, or I read about it, that really has stuck with me here. And it's finding, you know, developing the soundtrack to your life, finding your song. And I think I read at one point that for you, it's when you found it, it's so deep you won't even tell people what the name of the song is. But let's close on this. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, I will tell you. So yeah, I was sitting there and I was listening to music one night, and I was like, okay, what would my theme song be? And like, you know how in baseball the batters walk up and they have a song that they always play at the you know, at the pro games, like it's their song. And you know, I think that everybody probably has their own theme song to their life, and mine, I'll share it now. It's an old song, and it's not very well known, but it's "You Gotta Be" by Desiree, and it talks about you gotta be strong, you gotta be tough, you gotta be smart, like you have to be all these things in your life, kind of in order to survive. But in the song, it says, you know, this is kind of cheesy, but it says love will find a way. So like I liken that to, you know, you can be all these things on the outside, but you have to truly enjoy what you do, because that's what's going to, you know, keep you focused and grounded and enjoying life. So "You Gotta Be" by Desiree is my theme song to my life.
And I love that a lot, because I've always noticed when things are going well, there's always a song in my head, and it will take me back to, you know, usually sports, you know, sometimes it was just shooting around the driveway, or it could have been after a big play, but there are several. And it's not as if these songs are, you know, the ones I picked, but there are some that's the song that just went off in my head after that play. And they still stick with me. And it is, it's that connection to, okay, now I know I found something that means a lot to me. It doesn't matter why. It does, just that it does. And what we get from that is that when you connect, it's like you say, everything is good. And I think you also talk about karma. You know, if you start doing the right things, eventually it's all going to work out. So, Terry, I want to thank you again for sharing your story. I'm going to encourage other people to listen to your show, and I hope to have you on again in the future.
Yeah, anytime. I loved it. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
No problem. So, again, that's Kerry Taylor, everybody. Please listen to her show, Women Talking Football, and have a great evening. Good night, Kerry.
Good night. Thank you. Thank you.
Coach on Fire Radio.